Countdown for March 10th, 2005. Today we look at how proposed state and federal budget cuts would affect the low-income and children in Maine, here with Sister Lucille McDonald and Representative Sean Faircloth. Since 1983, the National Priorities Project has been focusing on the impacts of federal tax and spending policies on the community level. According to the NPP, the President's budget request for fiscal year 2006 would cut total spending in discretionary domestic services by 7%, not including Homeland Security, while at the same time increasing military spending by 2%, after adjusting for inflation. Military spending, as defined here, does not include the costs of the wars in Iraq or Afghanistan. Discretionary spending on federal grants to state and local governments would be cut under Bush's budget proposal by 9% after adjusting for inflation. The NPP's website, nationalpriorities.org, breaks down the impact on a state-by-state basis. In Maine, the budget proposal includes cuts of $89.2 million for discretionary grants to state and local governments, including $20.1 million for community and economic development, $3 million for low-income home energy assistance, and $3 million for the Clean Water State Revolving Fund. Programs constituting the No Child Left Behind Act would remain underfunded by $52.6 million. The No Child Left Behind legislation authorizes funding each year for its programs. However, the budget would underfund them nationwide in fiscal year 2006 by $13.1 billion. While taxpayers in Maine would lose local services, they will pay increasingly more for the Pentagon, including $57.1 million for the proposed increase in military spending and $440.2 million for what Congress has so far allocated for the Iraq War. The President's budget does not provide full information about discretionary spending in the future. It lays the foundation for steeper declines in domestic spending with continued increases in military spending. The Center on Budget and Priority and Policy Priorities estimates that domestic discretionary spending would decrease by 16% in real terms by 2010. Military spending would increase by 6%. And joining us today are Sister Lucille McDonald of the Emmaus Center, and also we plan to have Representative Sean Faircloth. Okay, he's with us by joining us by phone. And we're going to take a closer look at how these policies are impacting our local communities and some of our most vulnerable community members. Representative Faircloth, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And Sister Lucille, welcome.
Thank you.
And we're going to start with Representative Faircloth, and maybe you could just set the stage by telling us where things stand with the budget up there right now. I know that's being actively worked on, and I understand that some of the proposed cuts have been reinstated, but can you give us a quick rundown on where things stand and what the progress is looking like?
Sure, and I'm talking about the state budget, not the federal, of course.
Right.
As you've summarized, the federal budget will have a very negative impact on the nation, the world, and the state of Maine. But as a state representative in Augusta, I've been focusing on how the state budget proposal will affect people in Maine, and I'm concerned. I want to highlight one area in particular, and that is our most vulnerable children. As written, the state budget would dramatically cut programs for abused children, programs for children with special needs, and programs for mentally ill children. These are draconian cuts as written. The Health and Human Services Committee voted to reject several of these proposed cuts, as well as other cuts affecting other vulnerable populations. And my concern is that we take a responsible approach to this budget. And I think what we need to do is ensure continuation of these programs. In the 90s, I served as an assistant attorney general handling child protection cases. And even with the restorations from HHS committee, there's still some proposed cuts even after those proposed restorations, and they would result in child abuse allegations not being investigated. I'm very concerned that any budget proposed in the state of Maine should rely so heavily and place the burden so heavily on our most vulnerable children and populations. During the next week and a half, 2 weeks, I think you'll see key decisions being made, and I hope your listeners will speak out on behalf of the vulnerable and encourage legislators to restore those programs. And specifically, we've had a lot of support for a concept of having what we call frill fees on items like soda, cigarettes, and alcohol. This is not a property tax increase, it's not an income tax increase, but an increase on items that you may or may not use. I certainly have a beer every once in a while, and I'd be happy to drink one in honor of the kids of Maine, but it's an option I have. It's not a necessity. These programs for children are necessities.
Right. The budget struggles that are playing out between different departments and different programs and people advocating for their programs, is there any end in sight for this? As the state is getting less funding from the federal government, is there really any, you know, pool or fund of money somewhere that hasn't been looked at, or is this going to be an ongoing year after year kind of process? As long as the federal budget stays on the track that it's on.
Clearly, the proposals from President Bush will be harmful to vulnerable people in the state of Maine and harmful to lots of other programs that affect the state of Maine as well, including law enforcement. I've served as a former drug prosecutor, and I find it remarkable that an administration that counts itself as allegedly conservative would cut programs that will, as a result, decrease our public safety, just to name that one of many examples. But I will say that, nonetheless, even leaving aside the draconian Bush federal proposals, we in the state of Maine, I hope, would not even propose a budget such as is written here. When I talk to people in my area, I represent Bangor, you know, if I talk to folks at the corner store, the Bangor Mall, people are not only not opposed, but indeed supportive of the types of frill fees that I've discussed. And I think we need to have a budget proposal that is more in keeping with the good-hearted spirit of the people of Maine.
Representative Fairclough, could you specify some of those programs that you were saying would affect children? We know that still a lot hasn't been decided internally, and the vote wouldn't be coming in until perhaps April 1st. But you said that some of the programs were restored or were not going to be looked at anymore. But can you talk about the programs that are at threat right now?
Well, all the original proposals in the administration's budget are still possibilities. All that's happened in the interim is that the Health and Human Services Committee, which has jurisdiction over many of these social issues, has recommended against many, not all, but many of those proposed cuts. That's their opinion. That's their urging to the Appropriations Committee. But we don't know what will happen until it goes through the appropriations process, through the Houses of Senate and House, and ends up on the governor's desk, and then will there be a signature? So there's a long way to go. What we do know for certain is that there's a proposal that would cut community intervention programs, even after the HHS committee's proposed restorations, if those were to be accepted. That would mean that fewer people would investigate valid allegations of child abuse, which I think is a horrendous possibility, frankly. Child Developmental Services, which is a very positive program for kids with developmental disabilities. I'm not a scientist, and I don't know why we've seen the dramatic increase in the numbers of children with developmental disabilities, but it's the truth. And this budget proposes to cut dramatically that program in the second year. So listeners who have children who live with autism, Asperger's syndrome, mental retardation, other issues, will be in a tight and really, I think, precarious spot for their child if the budget as written were to come to pass.
And this is doesn't even make sense financially because down the it's a lot less expensive to intervene early on in any of these issues with the child development services or with the other main care programs that are being discussed, preventing things from escalating and just early intervention, helping people ahead of time before the problems get worse and therefore more expensive. So fiscally, that doesn't make any sense at all.
And in fact, the proposed child development services cut is one which on a again, a fiscally conservative basis strikes me as dubious because initially the department, this program, by the way, falls under the Department of Education, not under Health and Human Services, so it's a different department and a different legislative committee that reviews it. But that proposed cut initially was justified by the explanation that they would consolidate administration. I'm all for that, if you can create savings through consolidated administration, but just in the simple math of it, no one I spoke to could claim with any confidence or, frankly, with much of a straight face that you could get the amount of savings that they were putting in the budget from mere consolidation. You get rid of all the administration, you couldn't get that number. So to me, it was a dubious proposal. You mentioned the term early intervention. You're right to apply it to the things I mentioned. But in addition, there's cuts to home visitation programs, which have been in studies shown to help prevent child abuse. That's subject to a proposed cut in the state budget. Another thing you may have read recently is the Kids Count report from the Maine Children's Alliance came out a few weeks ago and discussed and documented the dramatic increase in mental health hospitalizations for children. And yet, this proposed budget seeks to cut by 7% Medicaid-eligible children's mental health services and additional cuts to children's mental health grants. It also proposes to cut foster care and privatize foster care, but it yet, and this again, if you're a fiscal conservative, I think seems unrealistic, it proposes to privatize the foster care system for kids that are in state custody, but it says that they wouldn't pay the private agencies an additional penny in order to administer those programs, which just isn't realistic. If I went to hire you for a job and said, yes, I will hire you for the job, I will pay you nothing, that's not a realistic proposal.
Right.
So that's a few of them.
Can you stay on the line with us while we bring Sister Lucille into the conversation?
Please.
Great, thank you. And Sister Lucille is with the Emmaus Center in Ellsworth, and you joined us a few weeks back for the Homelessness Marathon, and we started discussing this issue a bit, and you were telling us some stories about the impacts that you're seeing on a day-to-day basis, real-life stories there at the shelter with people who are just finding it impossible to get out of homelessness. The programs have been cut. Can you say some more about what you're seeing and also let's just start with that. What kinds of things are you seeing at the shelter and how bad is the problem there?
Well, I think I agree with Sean. I, too, am very concerned what's happening, and I think that President Bush is clearly making a wrong moral decision in slashing many of these programs that are going to affect children and the elderly. We also, I think the people who are very vulnerable are the single person without children. We have all shelters from going to Maine State Housing have been just full all the time. And we have three family rooms and the families that are calling today, possibly two more families were coming in. It's very difficult to get people out of the shelters because there's no place for them to go. Right now, everything is frozen. There is no way of getting anybody any subsidy in order to get out and get on their own. This is a bad time of year because very few jobs. People are out there searching for jobs, but they're just not there. With Section 8 vouchers frozen, Shelter Plus Care, all these that we have relied on for years, they're just not going to be there. And I know there's a lot of information coming out that possible block grants, and I think if we get into those, it's really going to be devastating because we'll do well the first year, but the other 4 years, there's just the money's not going to be there. Our phone is being rung off the hook for people calling in for assistance with for fuel and for rental assistance. This morning, Ellsworth City Hall called us and said that they are maxed out on many of the people who are coming to them for help. The city gets reimbursed half back from the state when they give out money, but when the shelter gives out money for people to assist them, we don't get reimbursed. And I think that, you know, is definitely, we see in the months to come, it's going to be, excuse me, very, very difficult to be able to be there for the people. And some of the things that people in our shelter rely on, like food stamps, WIC, and their Medicaid payments, medical, that's all going to be gone. And it looks like, you know, right now we're struggling. Is it going to be a fight over two things, money and priorities? You know, where, how much money is going to be filtered into the state from the federal? I understand that's going to be cut. I mean, we could be cut $45 billion for our Medicaid, and how that's going to affect people is just, I don't know what's going to happen. People, transportation is a big problem in Maine, and people are coming to us for small $10, $15 gas vouchers. I mean, how far can you go on that? Without transportation, you cannot get a job. So we see that it's going to be very, very difficult, and it's we don't know how we're going to be able to face it. It's, we found out that it cost us between $45 and $55 a night to keep a person in the shelter. With federal and state grants, we're reimbursed about $10 a night for per person for 11.5 days. After that, the reimbursement goes down to 30%. So we, too, are challenged to where is that money going to come from. To our budget is about $225,000 a year, and over 65% of that comes in through donations. And it's, do you spend all your time fundraising, or do you spend your time working with the people? I mean, it's a toss-up. What are you going to do with your time? And so, and we're not the only one. All nonprofit organizations are in this struggle, and it's, I think hard times are coming.
So you're seeing that a lot of the services that are, there are proposed cuts for will be impacting people who are perhaps much, who are not homeless but are closer to that.
Oh, the people, the young people especially who are couch surfing, just going from friends. And just recently, we know the jail is full. That's been in the newspapers, been in the, on the TV, that it's maxed out. They're putting them on couches. Well, we're getting them down from the jail, because when they get out of jail, they have no place to go. And depending on the severity of their, whatever they were in prison, in jail for, because we are a family shelter, who we can take, much of it is substance abuse, and so they go up to Open Door. But again, the budget for open substance abuse places like Open Door, that's going to be cut too. So all those things that are going to impact the people. We just found out on the TV last night that TOGUS, which is the Veterans Hospital here in the state, 50 positions are going to be cut by the end of September. We have had many veterans in the shelter, and we're going to get more because the availability of them having being able to taken care of by TOGUS, it's not going to be there.
Yeah. Representative Sean Faircloth, do you have any input into some of this?
Well, from about 1933 to 1963, or really around 1965, when Lyndon Johnson chose to make Vietnam the priority rather than social justice the priority, we had a three-decade period in American history where our society made a decision together that we cared about each other and were going to work together so that all people were included in that society. And increasingly, especially since the 1980s, I think we're seeing, some call it an ownership society. I call it an abandonment society. That if, you know, we picture America, as Mario Cuomo said, as going across the frontier. The philosophy used to be we all get there together, but increasingly it's a philosophy of, well, we'll drop some of the weak and some of the vulnerable off on the side of the road in the trail in the desert and leave them behind. And I think in Maine we have an opportunity to do something now, by which I mean now, in the next week and a half, 2 weeks, to politely but forcefully call, email your legislator and the governor. Go online. You can go to the Maine legislature website, find who your legislator is, find legislators from your region. Say it matters to you, because I, for one, of course, I would, as a sound fiscal policy, we should broaden the sales tax base in Maine. Right now we have a narrow base, and that means it fluctuates radically during good and bad economic times, so it's not intelligent fiscal policy just in and of itself, regardless of the current budget. The governor apparently has taken a position where he won't be supporting that broadening the base. I respectfully disagree with that. But if he won't do that, I think there is a realistic possibility that we could restore many of these programs, and specifically if we propose what some are calling raise a glass for Maine children. I attended an event in Portland last night at Meritage, a bar down there, in which a business owner directly affected by the proposed tax said he's for it, that it would help vulnerable people. He's happy to see that happen, doesn't see it as a problem for his business, doesn't see that type of tax as being some horrific burden to society, but sees these cuts as a horrific burden to society. And that's what I'm hearing from Maine people. But it needs your listeners to get on their websites, to get on their phones, and follow up with legislators, and respectfully but strongly urge that this budget be changed for the better, that these programs be restored for children, that these programs be restored for the vulnerable, and that we make things better. Sorry about the dog.
No problem. We're going to actually wrap it up here, and we'll ask Sister Lucille for her last comments as well. You have just sort of answered the question that I was about to ask you, which is what can people do? So thank you very much for joining us, Representative Sean Faircloth from Bangor.
Thank you.
And before we move on to Sister Lucille for her last thoughts, I wanted to also mention that right before we went on the air, we received a press release from the Maine Center for Economic Policy, and they say that speaking on behalf of 76 Maine organizations representing economic development, health care, the environment, education, religious, and civic interests, Christopher St. John called upon, who was of this group, called upon Senator Snow and Senator Collins to fix the federal budget. St. John, the director of the Maine Center for Economic Policy, pointed out that people feel a sense of urgency. Quote, the key vote is coming up in just a week. It will set the overall framework and ground rules for all subsequent budget decisions. If the budget resolution follows the administration proposal, Maine will lose another $300 million in federal aid in the next 5 years in domestic spending, and as much as another $300 million over 10 years in Medicaid. This would be a disaster, end quote. Also present at the announcement were Mark Dion, the sheriff of Cumberland County, Roland Miller from Development Director of the City of Auburn, Brownie Carson from the Natural Resources Council of Maine, Peter Stuckey, the Deputy Director of PROP, that's, I believe, Portland Regional Outreach Program, Debbie DeDominicus, Deputy Director of the Southern Maine Area on Aging, and Ron Phillips, the President of Coastal Enterprises. So a wide-ranging bunch of groups, coalition of groups. For more information, you can contact the Maine Center for Economic Policy in Augusta at 622-7381, and their website is mecep.org. And so there's the federal piece, if something to do about that. And Sister Lucille, any last thoughts from you? What do you think people can do?
Well, I just beg you to get out and email, write, whatever you can do to for the both federal and state. And I think that the Defense Department can expect to ask another $70 billion for Iraq in 2005. I think we can just ask for half of that, which is the cut, the $45 billion for Medicaid that be left in, because it's going to impact so many people. And these are the vulnerable people that really don't have a voice, and we have to be the voice for them. And so I just really ask everybody to get out there and make that phone call, make that email. Whatever you can do, please do it.
OK.
Great. Thank you so much, Sister Lucille. Now, briefly joining us by phone, we have our next guest, Brent. This Saturday, March 19th, is the second year anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. In the past 2 years, over 100,000 Iraqi civilians have been estimated to be killed and over 1,500 U.S. troops. An unknown number have been wounded or face illness from lack of infrastructure and the use of depleted uranium and weapons by the U.S. military. On Saturday, Mainers will demonstrate against the war on Iraq in Augusta. On Sunday the 20th, in the tradition of critical mass bike rides, there will be a resistance bike ride against the war in Bangor, and we have Brent joining us by phone right now. Welcome, Brent.
Hey, how's it going, Meredith?
Good, thanks. Could you briefly, in the next couple of minutes, tell us about this bike ride?
Yeah, sure. Well, it's called the Resistance Ride. It's basically an action that we've planned out to protest the administration, the war in Iraq, basically the ride is going to be, it's going to be in Bangor on the 20th. We're going to meet at Broadway Park in Bangor at noon. Hopefully Food Not Bombs is going to be there. We'll probably hang out for a little while, discuss exactly what we're going to do, and then get out and ride.
And do you have a destination at this point, or it will be decided on that day?
It's probably going to be decided on the day. It's going to be pretty open to whatever people want to do.
And you have a number of different groups and individuals interested in participating in this particular protest?
Yeah. It's pretty cool. I've been talking with a lot of different groups that and a lot of people that don't always come to protests and rallies. So we're getting a lot of different people coming out of the woodwork. I've talked with Veterans for Peace. I've talked with teachers at schools around here. I've talked with a lot of youth groups and different organizations. So hopefully it's going to be a lot of different people out there.
And you're aware that there's 3 feet of snow on the ground, right?
Yeah, hopefully
not. Should
be
one of the more interesting critical masses.
Yeah, hopefully not by then.
Okay, and quickly again, where will you be meeting?
We're going to be meeting at Broadway Park in Bangor at noon.
And is there a contact number?
Nope, just got to show up.
Okay, Broadway Park at noon. And just briefly, Brent, the message of this ride, resistance ride on the anniversary of the war.
Yeah, basically, we're just going to get out there and make our voices heard through, you know, whatever means we have at this point, we're just, you know, bringing our collective voice together and saying no to the war.
Great. And in the spirit of critical masses, are always festive and community-oriented.
Yeah, hopefully it's going to be a pretty fun event. So.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll hopefully hear more about it later.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
See ya.
And again, this is our pledge drive, and we did not want to interrupt our guests to ask you to call in for money, but please, if you have any that you could spare, we could certainly use it as well. The number is 1-800-643-6273. You can pledge online at weru.org, and if you're local, you can call us at 469-6600. You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. I'm Amy Brown.
And I'm Meredith DeFrancesco. Joel Mann engineered today's program. Andy Buckley does web and technical support.
You can reach us here at WERU or by emailing radioactive@mainindymedia.org. We have a new website, radioactivenews.org, where you can listen to or download archived programs.
Thanks for listening and acting. Stay tuned to your community radio station for more independent news.